Welcome to Comics,
episode
270.
This week, we talk about
Essential Luke Cage, Power Man.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast begins.
I am, like, barely lucid, and I am also right now doing online journal shopping.
Yes, dirndls are fucking awesome. They're the
I think I'm going to buy one today. Going to Oktoberfest today, and I think I'll buy one after. And then go to Oktoberfest again and wear it, because apparently one must.
And you kind of, you have to, especially in Munich. Munich is, Bayern is the only part of the country where you can wear that kind of thing around town, and nobody laughs at you.
Yeah.
Like, the rest of Germany, if you wear lederhosen as a dude, you're going to get laughed at. You can walk around downtown Munich in lederhosen. It's like, yeah, sure. Lederhosen next to a guy in a suit.
People wear it. You know what's funny? Like, we've met a few Germans who are like, no one wears it. But we live in the country, and we'll just see, like, all these people walking around in lederhosen and dirndl.
Because that shit is comfortable. I don't know about, I can't speak about dirndls, but lederhosen's fucking comfortable.
Do you have a pair?
I used to have a pair, and now I am too fat for it.
Oh.
But that shit was comfortable as hell, and I wish I could get another good pair. It's hard to get it here in the States.
Yes, that seems to be the case, but luckily, I am here now.
Yeah. Shop up.
For anyone, I don't know if we're putting this on the recording, but for anyone listening who doesn't know, dirndl are the traditional Bavarian wear that the ladies wear with much chestal support.
Well, and you know, I listen to a lot of female-oriented podcasts, let's say, stuff like Stuff Mom Never Told You, where it's some feminist issues, but also just some practical stuff, and they did one where they went into the history of the bra, and they were like, we're told to wear bras for all these reasons, for support and comfort, but also because it's supposed to be good for your boobs long-term and all that kind of stuff, but they were like, as they did more reading and did more research, they realized, like, a proper, well-fitted corset is probably, honestly, the best thing for women to wear. In terms of comfort, support, longevity, health for your body, it's way better than bras. But they have a stigma, because A, they're sexualized, and B, there's the idea that, like, if you wear a corset, it's supposed to, you're like not supposed to be able to breathe, but they said that's actually totally wrong. That means you have something on way too tight.
Yeah,
like that at that point it is not a corset for support, it is shapewear, and it's something different.
There is so much misinformation about ladies' undergarments that apparently 80% of women in the U.S. wear the wrong size of bra.
I bet,
because there's no, like, if you just Google, like, how to find bra size, there is not information there. And then you'll find, like, five different methods, and they're all different. And it's like, people make this assumption about, like, oh, I have to be such and such a size. And then they spend their whole lives wearing a wrong size thing. And that to me is bonkers, because if you put on, like, a pair of shoes and they didn't fit, you'd be like, screw this, and get a pair that did.
Yeah. And sizes change, too. Like,
yes.
What fit 10 years ago might not fit anymore.
Or if you've had kids.
Yes,
this was exactly. A weird tangent.
Yeah. Well, and also
comics.
It works. It, like, it's on my mind too, because A, I have a girl who just learned to crawl, so she's hit milestones. So I'm like, oh my god, the future. But then B, my wife went to get fitted for a bra, and it was the most awkward experience because the woman was way too handsy.
Oh.
It's like, oh, that's so horrible. Like, I can just, like, I imagine the analog of, like, okay, I'm going to go get, you know, I don't know, a junk supporter. I don't want any dude, no.
It's like the episode of Friends where they send Chandler to Joey's tailor, and he does the ball grab.
Oh, yeah.
And And he's like, that is not supposed to happen. And Joey is just oblivious. He's like, that's not normal.
What?
I thought that was part of the experience.
Yeah, we got far off.
Yes.
Yeah, you guys lost me there.
It's yeah, like well. 6:41 in the morning. It's cool. Luke Cage, in this comic, calls like half of the women he meets Mama.
Oh, and Fox.
And Fox. And he, Turkey.
He adds,
no, he doesn't call any ladies Turkey.
Somebody says Jive Turkey.
Yes.
I like that he adds Fox as a suffix. Like, he calls her Misty Fox. At one, I think,
does
one
he?
Or two points? Yeah, I caught that. Where did it happen?
Right, yeah.
It was issue 49. Oh, by the way, you know, David, were you able to find 52 and 53?
Yeah, I read all of it.
Okay, I wasn't able to. Well, I only read it to 51. What happened in 52 and 53?
So in 52, or in 52, Misty tries to go investigate the robot own, and then she gets kidnapped by the robot, by Nightshade. Did you meet Nightshade?
Yes.
And then Luke tries to go rescue her, and he gets beat up by some even stronger robots, and then the big robot, like, two of them gang up on Luke and are able to knock him out. And then they put Luke and Misty in a car, and then they push it into the river. And then they have to escape from the car. This is 52 still. They escape from the car, and then they call a police raid on the place where the robot people were hiding out. And then they, whatchamacallit, they've escaped. Nightshade and her robots have escaped. And so then the police are kind of, like, upset because Luke basically loses credibility with the police because he, there was nothing, there were no bad guys. And then, then Misty, like, cause she almost drowned, right? She's mm-hmm. really, like, tired. This scene really stood out to me for some reason. So there's all these police with them now, and she's like feeling really lightheaded and woozy. So the police medic comes over. he's like, oh, she's got a lot of contusions. And if she had, do you know what I'm talking about, Jen?
Yes, I do. Yes.
He goes, if she was in the river with all these cuts, she might have hepatitis.
What? Yeah.
Okay, this was 1978.
Yeah.
In a river in New Jersey.
Yeah.
They specifically said that she might have hepatitis. And so then Misty gets taken to the hospital, where she ends up being not having hepatitis. But then in 53, Luke and Iron Fist track down
Nightshade
and the robots, and then beat him up. And that's the end.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and Nightshade gives us her entire evil plan, and then Luke Cage and Iron Fist just, like, bust through the door and beat up the robots.
Yeah. Like Kool-Aid Man style.
Yeah. Yes, they do. Oh, and they realize that something's off when Misty notices that Nightshade does not wear perfume. And why would a woman not wear perfume around her man?
Yes, that is the actual, like, line of thinking.
I follow. Okay.
And then it turns out her man's a robot. Later.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to...
Chunky's a robot.
I want to... Okay, let's... I'm going to do the role thing right here. Let's talk about this week's comic.
This week's comic.
Since we already are. This week, we're following up last week where we did Iron Fist, and we're going to do Power Man, but it's kind of the bromance between Power Man and Iron Fist beginning. So we're reading episodes 48 to 53, Luke Cage, Power Man, which becomes Power Man and Iron Fist at 51, I want to say, becomes that, or 50?
Let me check.
But anyway, it's the run 1978, yeah.
Actually, 50. 50 okay. is the issue.
So 48 to 53 of that run, wherever the name changes. But yeah, it's so weird how this comic is such a part of its time, like the, and its place, like the idea of, of like, oh, well, how, why would you not wear perfume for your man when he's around? Like, there's that. But then on the other hand, there's sometimes when, like, it just casually is super ahead of its time. Like, Danny and Misty Knight are in an interracial relationship, and it's not a thing at all. And I don't know if I'm misremembering the 70s, but to me that seems like it would have been controversial. Like, a white guy and a black woman, I think that's like...
I think to some people, it still was an issue. I think probably in New York City, where Marvel Comics was based, it probably wasn't as much of an issue as it was in other parts of the country. But yeah, I mean, it certainly probably wasn't common.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's stuff like that kind of peppered in here where it feels really ahead of its time in terms of what it's trying to say about civil rights and race and all that kind of stuff. And then there's other times when it's, sweet Christmas, I hit him with my Sunday punch.
And there's like, happened. there's clear like blaxploitation.
Oh, yeah.
Themes. Yes.
But that was popular in the 70s. Yeah. In the late 70s, that was a thing that was popular across the country. And so, you know, now we kind of can look at it and see that it plays up racial stereotypes and stuff. And I mean, people probably realized that back in the 70s too, but, you know, it's what was popular. So they used it. I mean, Luke Cage was definitely a character of spun out of that, genre.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And his origin story is that genre, too. The unjust.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on, sorry.
I was just going to say but what's great about his character is he really grows in the intervening decades, you know. And so now, you know, in this character, in this comic, he is a ex-con... Or he's an escaped felon at first, and then he gets, you know, he gets exonerated. But in the comics, in the Luke Cage comics today, he's a responsible father.
Yeah.
It's he really grows as a character. And he's still, he's one of my favorite characters to read in like Avengers or Marvel Comics, just cause he's a really neat character, you know? He's very much a leader in the Marvel universe, and he's an interesting character, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say he goes from this to being the leader of the new Avengers.
Yeah,
that's quite a leap.
Mm-hmm. You know what's kind of interesting? It's like no matter what decade you read Luke Cage in, you cannot untie his character from his character's blackness. But on the flip side of that, it shows how Marvel, I don't know if it's an issue of perception, but certainly how they portray black people in America. Because it's like you said, like it comes out of the blacks, that's a hard word for me for some reason, blaxploitation fad from the 70s. But he evolves into being someone who is more than just kind of this archetypal black person. And I don't know. I think that it's really strange how in the 70s comic, Luke Cage talks black. And it's a really, like, trendy... I don't think trendy is even the word for that. But, like, it's a very time-specific way of talking. Like, he calls people jive turkeys.
Yeah.
He calls ladies mama.
And Fox.
Fox. It's very disco. But at the same time, you never see white people in this comic talking the same way. And I started at issue 38. And it's like the person who comes closest to talking like him is maybe Cheshire Cat, who is even more like into the like disco scene or whatever. He throws in way more of those idioms. And, like, the first you know, if you read, like, more modern Luke Cage comics, he's abandoned that entirely, because first off, like, why would you keep talking like that? It's no longer 1970s. But also, he's not, I think, meant to be stereotypical black guy. And I just think that the way his character grows is also showing how Marvel changes its portrayal of black people in general, because Luke Cage, if you took away his determination and his tiara in this comic, wouldn't be that different from most of the other black characters. Like, all the black dudes look fairly similar. They speak in a fairly similar manner. And same for the black ladies. Like, they all have the same hairstyle. They all speak with some, like, disco influence. And then you see the white people and they just don't.
I mean, you could also say that the white inflection and the white way of speaking is characteristic. Like, how does that look from the other side of the coin, too? Like, we're saying they talk like black people, but I'm sure from the other side of the coin, they would say, oh, well, Danny in this book talks like a white person. You know, a black guy in the 70s would say that.
And I mean, for instance, like, we see it with Joy Meacham. Everything she says is, like, ridiculously melodramatic.
Yes.
And she sounds like the rich person vibe, like, comes off of her. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think for me, the single major standout point of this comic is everyone talks so 70s.
Yes.
It's such a sticking point with me.
Yeah. But I want to say, you talked about, we talked about blaxploitation, and what I really like about what we read in this comic is it's the part where he gets exonerated for his crime, right? Because Power Man, Luke Cage, is such the image for blaxploitation, and I think I know there's got to be some incredible analysis that you can do about him and his origin story being framed for a crime and being accused of it and being charged for it probably because he was black. I know the jury of his quote-unquote peers is a jury almost of white people. That was part of a thing that happened in his sentencing. So I would love to read this whole, like, 50 issues and see how you get from there to him saying, when Danny asked him, how does it feel? He says, you know, the man I was died the day I went to prison. And about, like, him changing his name permanently. Like, I didn't even know his name was not Luke Cage before. I thought his name was Luke Cage, like, from birth. So for me, it's like, there's got to be something intelligent in there about his blackness and his going to prison and identity and all that kind of stuff. And I don't have the brain for that, and I don't have the skin tone to really speak about it, I think, authoritatively or with the kind of intelligence that I would need to. But there's all kinds of stuff in here. And, like, there's the issue where Stiletto and Discus crash the party and want to bring in vigilante justice. And there's a whole interesting point there, too, about, you know, what makes a vigilante righteous versus unrighteous. But is there an implication, because they're both super white guys. You know, they're the redheads, and they kind of talk a little bit rednecky. Is there a thing in there, like the racial vigilante justice coming in? I don't know. But I would love to listen to a podcast where somebody could talk about that intelligently. But this isn't that.
I think there are two sides to the Luke Cage in prison thing, because, like, on the one half of it, you could see it as he was put into a system which stripped him of his identity, and, you know, ruined his life as he was before. He takes it really hard.
Yeah.
Like, he, and not just the, like, unethical scientific experiments on him, because, ooh, there's a thing in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But just the fact that he was, like, a good guy sent to prison, he takes that super hard. And he's like, I died that day. On the other half of it, though, it's this idea of someone can be put into a really bad situation and they still have the agency and power to remake themselves as they see fit and be the person that they want to be. And I think a lot of these few issues that we read are Luke Cage deciding the kind of person that he wants to be. and then trying to pursue that and the internal struggle he feels. Because, you know, at the start, he's kind of like, these people aren't my problem. I just need to save my two friends. It's not a big deal. And by the end, you know, he's partners and he works for Nightwing Restorations. So, like, those are events that happened because of who he decided he wanted to be, despite what the system did to him. I think in a lot of ways it's a story about his own will to be a good man.
And it's him making the better choice than what he... I mean, before he was in a crap position and he couldn't have made a choice, but here he's in a similar position and he is able to make a choice to remove himself from the situation that he's put in. And make the smarter choice. And I mean, there was no smart choice to be made or not made before. But yeah, his last arc to his exoneration, how he's Bushmaster? Which, what the hell is that?
Bushmaster.
Like, his little battle against Bushmaster to rescue his friends is, I think, a nice foil to his imprisonment the first time. I mean, he's gonna lose friends and possibly go to jail again if he fucks this up. No, Bushmaster would just kill him. It's a very interesting, and like you're saying too about his arc escaping and making his own, making himself something. Bushmaster, I think, loses because he doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, and I think it also has that very Marvel idea of, like, you need friends to get along in the world, because, like, if Luke Cage had lied to everyone and said, like, you know, tried to protect himself instead of telling them the truth, Misty Knight would have turned him in.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, he decided to trust these strangers because they seemed like nice people, and it paid off for him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I mentioned Stiletto and Discus, and I just think they're worth mentioning again, because the whole time I was reading it, I was like, okay, we as the reader know that they are wrong, and we know that they're being dumb. And we're reaffirmed that we are on the right side here because they are just wantonly killing people, or putting people in harm's way. Nobody ever dies in this comic, but they are wantonly putting people in harm's way, so much so that Iron Fist and Power Man have to go and save people as they're getting, like, balconies falling on them and all that kind of stuff. But the things that Stiletto and Discus are saying while they're chasing down Luke Cage are the same kinds of things that, like, per se, Batman says, like, oh, you're a bad guy, you were guilty of this crime, you're a con, you escaped, you got let off because you paid for a nice high-profile lawyer, you know, the system let you out. I mean, this is the kind of thing that we hear is the impetus for becoming a vigilante, like, one of the good guys, is that you're tired of the system not working. And it's so interesting how they're making the assumptions, and we know that they don't have proof, because if they did, they would be wrong. But it also, on the flip side, like, we take for granted that Batman does his due diligence. You know, we take for granted that the people on the right side of it are right and have done their homework. But I was like, wow, in all of my years of comics, I have never seen this kind of portrayal of a villain who thinks that they are being a good guy. They're just stupid.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting, because, I mean, comics is in a lot of ways predicated on this idea that the hero is the good guy. And if he's having some kind of internal conflict or something, you can play with that. But the reader has to trust that the hero is good. And here, like, obviously the reader trusts that Luke Cage is the good guy and these guys are bad, and it's shown because they're, like, harming civilians. But at the same time, it is playing on that idea, and Luke Cage is, like, one of the definite gray area guys. Everyone's like, oh, hero for hire? Have you turned to villainy now? So it seems like even within the Marvel world, he's perceived as being more borderline because of the money aspect.
And speaking strictly, he, you know, even if you are falsely sentenced and you're put in jail when you are innocent, if you escape, you are still guilty of escaping. So he is still guilty. Like, he's exonerated from his original crime, but I don't know whatever happened to his escaping and being a fugitive and evading arrest for, what was it, 10 years? Or however
many years? Yeah, you'd think that would warrant some punishment, but...
Something, but it's not mentioned at all. So maybe that's what Stiletto and Discus are getting, getting justice for.
Well, the funny thing about those two is that... don't they mention that the judge who hands down Luke's exoneration is their dad?
I think they mentioned that, yeah. They mentioned something about a dad, and I didn't catch who was the dad.
No, the warden. The warden who was nice to Luke Cage their dad.
Yes, that's right. Okay.
So, yeah, that's interesting because, you know, they don't even believe that their father is on the...
Yeah,
on the right side of the law, I guess, because he still goes to bat for Luke. He's happy to see the truth revealed, right? But then they still Discus and Stiletto.
Stiletto does not sound like a dude's hero name, right? I mean,
no.
What does Stiletto mean other than a stiletto heel? I know there's another
meaning. Isn't it like a type of knife?
Yeah, it's a sharp knife, but I think the heel.
Yeah. Maybe just now, 40 years later, nobody ever thinks of the knife. So, and then the other thing I want to talk about in terms of this comic being maybe ahead of its time, but I don't think not really, because at this point, there's part of blaxploitation and all that kind of stuff is the femme fatale stereotype. But I think it's interesting how Misty has to constantly remind Danny that she is a capable person and can do things for herself.
Oh my god, I really wanted to talk about this. She's not, though. Right? Like, she is so... She fascinates me in this comic because she is awesome, but she's also incredibly lame.
Well, it seems like she has... You know, she is a capable person... But I think she also has an inflated sense of her, I don't know,
her
invulnerabilities. So she puts herself into dangerous situations unnecessarily or without asking for help, you know? Like she goes, when she gets captured by what's his name? Shreve?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like she could have asked for help, you know, but. I mean, she knows that the robots were, like, really dangerous. She was there when they initially fought them, but she went on her own to try to confront these people. And, you know, she has a group of people, she has a circle of friends who are also capable. And, you know, if they had gone together, maybe this wouldn't have happened. So,
yeah.
I mean, she's really badass for her initiative and the fact that she takes no shit. But at the same time, I think in some ways it's the plot doing it to her, and in others it's her doing it to herself, and it kind of depends on the situation. She is, like, just useless and has to be rescued a lot.
Yeah, like,
I think
I think it is because she finds herself in over her head way too often in these issues. I mean, Power Man greatly surpasses her in terms of ability. Iron Fist does as well. I think she's, you know, maybe a little bit above Colleen because she's got the bionic arm. But even then, I feel like as much as she affirms that she's a capable person, I mean, physically, whatever, in terms of fights, it's a different thing. But I think if you're going to roll with the good guys, you got to also be capable morally. And I think what got me more is not that she needed help in the fights, because that's fine. That happens, especially with these street-level heroes. And I like the way that in this, the cops were good. It was taken for granted, or like it was taken as fact that the cops are good guys and they're going to come and they're going to help. Like, there's none of this corrupt Arkham, you know, or corrupt Gotham, Batman. No. All the cops are good. Misty Knight's a cop. She's got a good partner. And they're going to call cops. And cops, even though they might not be great, are going to do their job. And they're going to apprehend people. And that's awesome that that's taken for granted. But then she fucking shoots that guy. Like,
yeah.
She needs the moral rescuing. Like, the physical rescuing, fine. Okay, because you want to have the street level, you want to have the cops, you want to do that, cool. Moral rescuing, you can't have her do that. She has to hold her own one way or the other, either ethically or physically, and she doesn't do either one.
I think that so often the women are held up as like the moral compasses in stories and comics because of that, you know, women's sensibility. And it's really interesting that we get to see this really gritty, angry part of Misty. She isn't their moral compass. She's their boss lady. And I think that's interesting. I think Iron Fist is more their moral compass of anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually really like that about her, because I think if she was just like, oh, do the right thing the whole time, but was like constantly fainting or passing out or getting knocked out, she'd be kind of lame. But here, she's a woman who has like real grit.
Yeah.
But is just not physically capable because she is not a superpowered person of keeping up. At the same time, I think the story kind of dicks her sometimes because, like, it just doesn't give her a chance. She gets knocked out when Luke Cage first comes in to Danny Rand's apartment.
She just throws her into the wall.
Yeah. And okay, that makes sense. I mean, he's crazy strong, and he thought she could take it because she had the arm. So he's like, maybe the rest of her is like that. Okay. She passes out when she almost drowns in the river and maybe gets hepatitis.
I think we can give her a pass on almost drowning.
Yeah.
Well, but then she faints later. She gets knocked out a few times. But it's like, you think the story could give her something. Why does Luke Cage always have to be the one saving her? Like, they could have been like, oh, she's awake in the car and he's passed out. Maybe she has to find the way to rescue this, like, 300-pound dude from a sinking car.
Yeah, that'd be fun. And I mean, and I don't know. I want to hop in here on another. I don't think she needs to be the moral compass. I think Danny is the moral compass. Makes sense, because Danny is the one who's not from the earthly plane. this is before the Matt Fraction run. So in this one, he is born and raised in Kunlun, and then he comes to Earth as Iron Fist. So he has not been to Earth before then. So I think he makes a good moral compass, because he's raised in this heavenly city, and he's raised knowing all of the right moral answers, but then he's moved to a gray world, not kind of thing. Misty, I don't think, should be the moral compass, but it was a great opportunity for them to introduce a moral gray area for her. Like, hold the gun out, point it at the dude, and then have Luke come in and crush the gun, right? What gets me is that she fired it at his head and Power Man stopped the bullet. Like, that means she was gonna point blank, cold blooded murder that guy. Like, that, there's no gray area. That makes Misty a bad guy in that issue.
Yeah.
Bar none.
You know what's interesting? Did you read the issues with Joy Meacham? Were those around?
I think I got like the first half of 52. It was weird.
I read those, yeah.
So Joy Meacham is presented with the same thing. Danny Rand hands her a gun and is like, if you want vengeance, take it. She points it at him and then goes, no, I can't, and just starts crying.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting foil to Misty Knight, because they had totally opposite reactions in the same situation.
Well,
Misty,
I mean,
had no hesitation.
Misty also has experience with violence more than, presumably more than Joy does. I mean, she was a police officer and all that. Mm-hmm. But still, you'd think that she would have a little bit more restraint, but she pulled the trigger, right? but yeah, I think, she does make it, they do make an interesting foil for one another, so. Yes, yeah. I agree.
Well, and we brought up Joy. The other thing I want to bring up when we talk about Joy is, I want to talk about Harlem as a place and how it works in New York and its portrayal in the comic, in that it's constantly referenced whenever they leave Harlem, and go somewhere where there's quote unquote richness. They always say it's just 2 miles away, or just a mere few blocks away. And it's this, it builds this idea slowly over time that Harlem is just like this hole of poor and segregated in the middle of an otherwise affluent area. That's just, for some reason, Harlem is stuck here. I like the place of Harlem gets that idea of stuckness across, that contributes to Luke Cage's background and his upbringing and the idea of who he is as a character. And it reinforces, like, early on when he's, when, not earlier on, when they're, when they fight the robots and the cops come in and say, "Who started this?" And they all go, "Luke Cage started it." And Danny's like, "The fuck are you talking about, man?" You know, and Luke has to be like, "No, this is, this, this, like, 10 block by 10 block area of New York works nothing like the way you think it does, Danny. Just trust me." just roll with it. And I like the way that it's slowly built over time in this comic. The idea that Harlem is this place just a few blocks from all this affluence that just doesn't seem to reach it somehow. Maybe because they're black.
Yep.
Yeah. Again, go find another podcast with people of color who can talk more intelligently about this than me. Because that's about as far as my analysis can get.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I think we talked about this a little bit with... we talked about it a little bit when we talked... Was it when we talked about Iron Fist?
Yes.
Like, it's hard for us to... put ourselves in the same shoes because being white guys, it's hard to, we don't have the same experiences, right? So, I certainly think that the issues that people of color run into are totally, legitimate and they're real, they are real problems. But like I said, it's hard to, see myself in those. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you can't really speak authoritatively on things that you've never experienced. And
yeah,
I never grew up in Harlem. Can't say much about it.
Hey, so what was your guys' favorite scenes? I'm gonna go first.
Wait, before we do the scenes thing, I need to flex my English major muscles here a little bit.
All right.
So, do you guys know the significance of the name Rossum?
Rossum's Universal Robots.
Yeah, Jen knows.
Yeah, by Carl Capek. It was a predecessor, or like an inspiration, I think, for Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which we all know and love as Blade Runner.
Jen, didn't we read that in the same class?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
I read it when I was in Sounds Like State, too. But yeah, it's the first use of the word robot in the English language. Which is cool.
Yeah. Okay.
English major power.
Yeah. So we'll talk about our favorite scenes. My favorite was at the beginning of issue 49. So the end of 48, they have just finished fighting. And it's this wrecked apartment. And they're all just kind of, "I don't know if I can trust you. What's going on here? I don't know." And then issue 49 starts. And they're all just chilling on couches. Like, I don't know how that transition happened, but they're just chilling on couches. And my favorite is Iron Fist, because he's sitting on the end of the couch, and for some reason there's just a dog showed up in his lap, and he's just chilling, petting the dog.
I didn't even notice the dog.
He's just sitting there chilling, petting a dog, like saying...
It's an ugly dog.
Yeah, he's just petting the dog and saying, "So, Luke, why did you try to kill my girlfriend?" Like, why are you so chill right now, Danny? Is it pet therapy going on? But I think that's because it's a comic from the 70s and it was published with the understanding that maybe you didn't read last week at all, so or last month at all, the last issue. And I think it's just, you don't need to worry about continuity so much. You don't have to explain how they got into a perfectly clean apartment and chilling with
it. Well, I mean, Danny is very wealthy.
Yes.
He presumably has a large penthouse type apartment, so maybe they just went to another part of the building.
Yes, but sitting here reading them in order, it was quite jarring. Anyway, what were your guys' favorite scenes?
Oh man, it's hard to choose.
Sweet Christmas.
I love.
I got. Oh, go on, do yours.
Yeah, the Sweet Christmas parts were all excellent.
I hit him with my Sunday punch. I like that he names it his Sunday punch.
Okay, go ahead, Jen.
Okay. I kind of got two. One is just really goofy, and it's, I think Danny Rand is like sitting on a roof, or he's like scoping out some situation or fighting someone, and he keeps calling himself Young Dragon.
Oh, yes.
He's like, calm yourself, young dragon. Think, actually young pops dragon.
It pops up once in a while.
Yeah, and it's just like, dude, you are so cheesy. Can it? My favorite scene, though, is I think when they get Nightshade and they blow up Chunky, or whatever her robot guy is named, and she pretends to cry. And I have, like, two sets of feelings on this, because on the one, I was like, oh my god, that is so sad. I was ready to be incredibly sympathetic toward her. And then she turns around with a gun and is like, fuck you guys. And I was just like, that is awesome.
And she also says he was the only friend I ever had.
Yeah, our fat robot man. So, Chunky, rest in peace.
I think it was kind of an interesting character because she, you know, she was certainly the real power. But she put Chunky as the face of her criminal organization because she was smart enough to know, at least in this time period, like people probably weren't going to take her seriously. So she outsmarted everyone.
True that.
What's so funny about her, though, she's like, I realize two things got you places, studying and crime, so I did both. It's like, okay, I'm glad you got your bases covered, but I don't think that worked.
Yeah, I liked her little origin story, the six panels where we see her.
Yeah.
And the authorities soon found that no jail could hold me for long. Which shows her escaping prison. Yeah, she was. I don't know if she has any other appearances in the Marvel, in the Marvel universe. But she was pretty cool.
That's what I was gonna say. Do any of these villains ever show up again? Because I don't recognize any of them.
Bushmaster is. Yeah. But there was, I think. Well, Bushmaster. I think there's more than one Bushmaster.
Is it an earned title?
It's a legacy.
Well, no, because I think
it's his last name.
The Bushmaster I'm thinking of is from the Serpent Society. So he's a snake-themed villain.
I don't know if that's related.
They're both called Bushmaster. Okay, let me Google. Let me look it up. Hold on. I want to know now. Okay.
Because, like, we had read a bunch.
Okay. Yeah, so the second Bushmaster is the first Bushmaster's younger brother.
Okay.
Oh my god, he became a quadruple amputee when he lost his arms and legs in a boating accident.
Oh.
Jesus.
And then he becomes a snake man.
Harsh. That's dark. That's
he
so
has
dark.
Bionic arms and a snake-like tail at the place of the lower half of his body.
Jesus.
He actually looks kind of badass in the picture on Wikipedia.
Because it seems weird to me because, like, we've read Iron Man comics from this era, X-Men comics from this era, and I recognize, and had Captain America comics from this era, and I recognize most of the villains in those because they either stick around or are reinvented or are still part of the universe or their legacy. But I read a couple issues. I think I read 38 and 39 before we decided to switch and do these. And then I read these, and I don't recognize any of these names at all from any of the Power Man stuff that I've read. And I'm like, I wonder why not.
How often do you see Stilt Man anymore?
He shows up frequently as a joke.
Really?
I want to say. I think
okay.
So.
I feel like we don't see a lot of 70s villains anymore because most of them are so lame.
Well, like Batroc. Cut into the movie.
Because he's cool.
Yeah, but in my mind, Batroc is right there with Stiltman. And if Batroc can get in a movie, I think Joy Meacham could be in Defenders, the Netflix show.
She could be. I mean, Claire Temple is in the Netflix shows.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yep. You guys ready to rate this?
Sure.
All right, Jen, how about you go first?
I'm going to give it a 3. It's a bit better than average. It's so hard to judge old comics. I think I say this every time because they're so far removed from like what I consider to be in any way sane. But I think it actually, especially after talking about it, has a lot of interesting things going on in the background aside from just like this goofy buddy team-up plot. I mean, we see Luke Cage really make a pivotal choice for who his character is and will be in future decades. And I think that's neat. We see kind of a really interesting portrayal in Misty Knight, and I do value how much page time they gave her. Like, she's cool. I really like her character. But yeah, I mean, it's so very, very like Silver Age comic. You know, people come in and they use Christmas as a swear word and they throw their Sunday punches. And like, for instance, in the last issue, Nightshade gives her entire plan and I'm like, there's only like 4 pages left. How is this going to resolve? And they just come in and like, you know, it's over really quickly. The pacing of these things is meant for a serialized reading and is weird when you get to it in trades. And it's meant for, I think it was meant to be read by people who may or may not follow every issue and younger kids. Or at least like, I don't know, teenagers. So it's not like polished, but it's still interesting and funny. I'm probably not going to keep reading this specific arc, but I think it's a wonderful introduction to the characters. So yeah, a 3.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the biggest difference is that the difference in target audience, because nowadays comics are targeted at us and people maybe even a little bit older than us. But these comics were definitely pointed at some kid buying it off of a newsstand on the street for a dime. That's what this was targeted at.
It was 35 cents.
35 cents.
The cover says.
Well, pricey.
My bad. But yeah, it was targeted just like somebody walking by who happened to have enough change in his pocket for it this month, but maybe not for the next issue. Or who knows which one's even on the newsstand when you go. Like, it wasn't targeted. It just, comics were a different thing then than what they are now. But given that, I'm going to go next. I'm going to rate this. I'm going to give it a 3.5. Mostly because when I read this, I can see how there was the blaxploitation, and he's definitely a blaxploitation character, but I think they're renaming him here and trying to transition him into being Luke Cage instead of Power Man and changing his name and all the stuff that they're doing here. I know that there is a bigger point being made. I just don't know it. And part of me knows that because the writer for this was Chris Claremont, who also did all the awesome stuff on X-Men. And he's probably the person who's responsible for conflating the mutant crisis with being a civil rights allegory. That was Chris Claremont. So I believe Chris Claremont has some say on about civil rights that he's trying to make here. I'm just not smart enough to pick up on it because he's being subtle, I think, because he has to be subtle. I guess I'm just not, I'm not, we're so far beyond where they were that I don't pick up on the things I think I'm supposed to have picked up on or would have known was offensive or those little cues I think that got dropped here and there. I don't see them the way that I think people would have seen them when they were reading it in the 70s. That said, the fact that I recognize that there is stuff in here means that whatever he was trying to say is still relevant. So I think I'm going to read this again or maybe read a little bit more because I am really interested in trying to figure out what the hell that message is. Because Chris Claremont, you are smarter than me and I need to read this twice. But yeah, 3.5. David?
I'm going to give it a 3. It's reading comics from this era is tough because there's so much in that it's, I feel like it's kind of a slog to read through all of it sometimes.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, this was a pretty fun comic. You know, there was some humor and I got to see one of my favorite characters, Luke Cage in his original form. So it's a pretty good comic. I'd say if you are new to comics, it's probably, and you want to read about Luke Cage, probably pick up something more recent.
Yeah.
But this is still a good comic, and it gives you an interesting peek into Marvel in the 70s. Yeah. So I don't know what else to say. You guys said a lot of good stuff, so I'm just going to end with that and say I'm giving it a 3.
You know, and you say, like, this isn't one that you would recommend if you're interested in these characters.
No, not necessarily. What I meant to say is...
Like for a good reader, or not good for a new reader, or someone doesn't... I don't know, I'm putting words in your mouth.
I mean, this, like, if you've never read a Luke Cage comic, or you haven't read many comics, and you're interested in Luke Cage, probably start with something newer, just because I feel like there's a bit of a barrier to entry when it comes to these older comics. It's not, they're not as easy to read as newer stuff. But, you know, does that mean there's less substance in the new comics? I don't know. That's a different commentary, but this is not a bad comic in any way.
I think it's interesting because that is true, and I agree with you, but I think it's sad because when I was doing research trying to find a good Luke Cage comic, there really weren't any. And I think people are excited for Luke Cage, the Netflix show, and I'm worried because when you watch that and you go, oh, I want to read more Luke Cage comics, and you Google best Luke Cage stories, it's New Avengers where he's a cast member. It's Thunderbolts, where he's a cast member, part of a team. It's Noir, which is an Elseworlds kind of thing. It's not part of the canon. And then this. And it's kind of like, where is the good Luke Cage story on its own?
Well, there hasn't been standalone Luke Cage comics in a really long time.
Yeah, and I mean, now there's a new run, I think it's 8 issues in, of Power Man and Luke Cage, or sorry, Luke Cage and Iron Fist. And I'm interested in reading that. It's newer, but I'm still like, maybe not a solo book. Well, I guess I am wanting a solo book. Maybe he'll get one after the Netflix show is good. It seems odd. The same reason I think we'll figure this out next week.
Well, I mean, you could say the same thing. Like,
there's not a team like the Defenders team that they're putting together.
Well, I mean, like, how long was there no Doctor Strange comics? It's just, I think it just,
yeah,
Marvel, would, for whatever reason, feels that certain characters don't sell solo books, and so they don't even make them, which is probably a bit unfortunate because they never are really given the chance to do that, so, I don't know. I think, you know, Luke Cage in New Avengers was part of the cast, but there were a lot of stories where he was the central character. But yeah, you know, he had a large supporting cast of very well-known characters, so, you know, one could say, argue that that takes away from Luke Cage, too, so.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, like, the other thing you could do is, if this Netflix thing goes well, maybe not a whole ongoing, but, like, I was thinking for a minute, like, well, maybe a 6 or 12 issue miniseries, retells the origin and story of Luke Cage. But then I realized, as you were talking about the teams, that's probably impossible because, like we were talking about earlier, his journey from being framed for jail to becoming the person he is today in the comics is such a long story. It took him 40 years to get there. There are heroes who had their story arc that lasted 20 years and they've just kind of maintained from there where they were at the time. I'm thinking of Iron Man is not a significantly different person today than he was in the 80s. He's a character that's been kind of stagnant for about 30 years, whereas Luke has changed a lot and grown a lot, and I don't know if you could fit that into 12 issues. And I don't, if you want to retell a story, I don't know that you could do it comprehensively and with brevity.
It would be hard to wrap or to package his growth in a small way, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to see somebody try though. I would love to see it.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you. I like Luke Cage a lot, and I smile every time I see him in a comic, and I'm really happy that he's coming on Netflix. But I just wish there was more. Anyway, that's for this week. Next week, we were going to do a comic for The Defenders, because this Netflix is it's Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. The problem is there's not really a team like that at all.
Yeah, if you look up The Defenders, I think the Defenders team was like Doctor Strange, Silver Surfer, the Hulk, and somebody else. Nighthawk.
Same problem. We had the same
problem. It was Nighthawk. It was Nighthawk. Who was most of you are probably saying, "Who's Nighthawk?" Because he's that kind of character.
Yeah. So anyway, what we're gonna do instead is we're gonna read Shadowland. Shadowland is not a good comic, but we're gonna read it because it's. I think it's not necessarily the mood that they're going for with the Netflix shows. But it is a comic about the street level hero, and it involves a lot of the same characters that are going to be in that Defenders show. So that's the closest we can do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a story that centers around Daredevil, and it has ninjas, which are central. They're in the Daredevil TV show.
Yeah, martial arts.
Yeah.
And Luke and Danny Rand are in it. So
yeah. There you go. So anyway, this is a 5-issue mini from I don't know sometime in the 2000s. Written by Andy Diggle, Shadowland. We're just going to read the 5 issues of the mini. Call it good. If there's more content in the trade, I don't care because it wasn't a good run.
There were a bunch of, like, one-shots. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not reading those. Just read the 5 issues of Shadowland. But if you didn't catch that, go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, click on the button that says Future Shows. We'll have a link there that says what we have coming up and write to Amazon of the exact thing that we're going to read. So just go to welcometocomics.com. And if you like this show and you want to support it, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. You will get access to a bunch of, you will get access to bonus episodes every 3 or 4 weeks. So we'll finish an arc. Like right now, we're doing this Netflix coming up. After the episode is done next week, the following week, there'll be a Patreon exclusive episode that you'll only get to hear if you are a Patreon patron. And really you get access to it for only a penny. I try to make it as easy as you can. We make enough money from Patreon to keep the site up, and past that, I'm happy. We don't want you to pay for our comics. We don't want you to pay for our times. We like talking about comics anyway. Just keep us going, folks.
This is for fun.
Yeah, keep us going, and let us know that let us know that you love us. It only takes a penny. Patreon.com/welcometocomics. All right, that's it for this week. Next week, Defenders, Shadowland. Okay. Until then, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.